can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Guy James Show. So good to have you along with us today. I hope you're all doing well today, feeling good and all that sort of thing. It is April the 13th. For anybody that wants to know, We escaped to Friday the 13th by one day, so there you go. Got Easter coming up for a lot of folks. Passover, if you're Jewish, having your Seder meal and all that. So enjoy the season, whichever one you're taking part in. Great to have you along today. I posted a post on Democratic Underground today that we're going to talk about the pros and cons, whichever way you believe, about whether this Iran business is some sort of a wag the dog scenario. I can see it being argued from both sides, and I'm going to try and do that today, and I'd like to know what your thoughts are on that subject. 866-546-5254. That's 866-546-5254. We'd love to hear from you today, and again, we'd like to try out that subject today. Do you think the Iran business is wag the dog? I can definitely see you coming at it from both directions, and we'll try and do that throughout the program today. Thanks to everybody that sent all the emails wanting to know about some of the music we played and all. I tried to answer each and every one that did send that in, and hopefully you've all got your answers and have found the various websites and musicians that you wanted to talk to. So we got that taken care of. And we get mail. Hey, how about if I start off the show today with something funny? Let's do that. You know, normally I would get the music out and make a big production out of this and all, but we don't get a lot of hate mail anymore since we live in right-wing heaven here, and since we're not on the radio, frankly, there's just not a lot of right-wingers out there. But we do hear from some. But I just wanted to let you know about this one, because I thought this one was particularly... Oh, I don't know. I'm searching for the word. It describes your average right-winger perfectly, I think. This is from Mike Goodman. Mike Goodman, that's right. I think he's from Iowa City, Iowa. Anyway, let me just read this letter to you, as much of it as I can. I just got a big bang out of it. And I'll leave it up to you to decide whether or not you think of somebody just having fun with me, or if this guy's serious. Frankly, I kind of think he's serious, because I've read a lot of these letters over the years. Guy, I was raised to trust in God and honesty and have respect for everybody. In parentheses, he has even American-hating liberals like you are, especially for old people. But in your case, I just have to me an exception. He misspelled inception, exception. You are a crazy fool, a moron, M-O-R-A-N, and I think you not even hate God and America. I think you might mean you might even, but you must hate yourself too. How dare you insult our president this way? Don't you know that in a time of war, we must all stand together? Now we're faced with a very serious, spelled S-E-R-I-O-S, threat from Iran, and we just must show those THOS camel effers who the boss is on this planet. I don't want to live under a Taliban leader, and I don't want my wife to wear a towel over her head. You are such a coward. It's just shameful. I'll bet you would have not even fought back in World War II after Hitler. I think he meant Hitler there, but it's Hitler. Maybe hit us at Pearl Harbor. Yes, that's right, that famous Pearl Harbor attack. People like you should be deported to Russia, where you belong, you hateful, lying son of a bitch. I bet your mother was just some dirty whore and your father was paying for it. See what you made me do, you pig? I have never talked to somebody like that, but you made me do it. What else can I do? You don't understand any other language, so F you and all your other lib friends. Long live America. God bless all Republicans. Mike. Now, there's a little postscript to this letter here, and it says, don't even try to send your lib... Get your pencils and papers out. Don't even try to send your lib friends to crash my sister's website. www.shelleytherepublican.com. That's S-H-E-L-L-E-Y, therepublican.com. You pig. All right. Regards, Mike. Well, if you think this letter's a hoot, wait till you see ShelleyTheRepublican.com. Ooh, mama. It's a beauty. You know, we often ponder that 30-some-odd percent that's still back in Bush. I think here you go. I think this is the mindset we've got right here. There it is. At ShelleyTheRepublican.com. So if you want to waste a little time and have a little fun, just head on over there and take a look at a website done by possibly one of the most misinformed Bretons ever to make a website. I don't know. So there, we have that out of the way. 866-546-5254, we invite your calls today. I tried to watch a little bit of C-SPAN. I saw Colonel Wilkinson. How many of you saw that? That most interesting speech. And I've been seeing a lot of Anthony Zinni show up on the MSNBC and so forth, a lot of interviews. And while I admire Anthony Zinni speaking out, he's a former high-level officer in the Pentagon, he was so disgusted by the run-up to war in Iraq that he resigned rather than take part in it. And then he wrote an op-ed detailing his disgust. And a book. The only problem is that he wrote his op-ed in 2006. And as far as I'm concerned, that's a less than optimal use of his knowledge and his credibility. And I find it disturbing that he felt so strongly that Iraq was a distraction from the real conflict that he could, you know, he quit his job at the Pentagon, but then he kept his mouth shut for all this time. I always thought that when you accept a post in the United States government, military or otherwise, you take on an obligation to protect the country and its instructions to the best of your ability. And this man obviously disagreed with the war in Iraq, but I don't think washing his hands of the matter by quitting and not speaking out fits the spirit of his duty. It's my opinion, anyway, that he should have stayed and help to possibly mitigate the coming disaster of the Iraq war, or he should have spoken out immediately and tried to prevent the coming disaster. What he did was run and hide and hope someone else would take care of the problem for him, and I really don't find that particularly inspiring. Why didn't he speak out when it would do some good? I'll tell you why, because from what I hear inside the Beltway, the brass at the Pentagon scared to death to say anything to Don Rumsfeld, scared to death to say one word of dissent to him, scared to death that he'll fire their asses and get them out of there, force them out any way he can. How many of you saw that disgusting little interview the other day with, it was one of those press briefings by the Defense Department that Rummy does so often. He had a General Pace up there, and General Pace up there giving us, swearing to the public just how wonderful a man Don Rumsfeld is. Interesting that he'd have to have someone come up and testify for him the way he did. Very interesting. Don Rumsfeld is a name that I believe, to quote a phrase by Franklin Roosevelt, I think is a name that'll go down in infamy here in America. I think Donald Rumsfeld's name will be listed with the likes of some of the great traitors that we've had in this country. I think his name will be with him. I really do. Benedict Arnold. What Rumsfeld done cost more lives than Benedict Arnold ever did. he is, with the consent of his vice presidential pal, Mr. Cheney, they've run roughshod over the Joint Chiefs of Staff and everybody in the Pentagon, and to the point where the Pentagon, the people that ought to be making these decisions, at least have a great input into them on how to, if you're going to go to war, they shouldn't have that decision. But if you're going to go to war, I can't think of anybody better suited to fight the war than the Pentagon. That's when you keep the civilians out, in my opinion. They should have no say in deciding whether or not we go to war, but once war is declared, the thing should be put in the hands of the military. And evidently, that's not how it is today. That's why, even though we went into Iraq, and we should not have, having the power in the hands of Donald Rumsfeld the way it has been is the reason that this thing turned out to be a military disaster. Oh, yes, it looked good for a few days. They planned for a quick strike war. They did not plan for a post-war occupation to last this long. Many of the military experts had predicted exactly what's happened now with this insurgency, with the Sunnis and the Shias and the Kurds. Many of them predicted that and have hit it right on the money. But Rumsfeld insisted that they keep their opinions to themselves, and if they did openly dissent, he forced them out. That's the way it is. Just a man whose persona fits the Bush administration to a T, don't you think? I don't give a damn what anybody says. I'm going to do what I think is right. And even though he had no experience as a professional military man, as a tactician, nothing. And that he somehow declared himself capable and competent to run a war, to decide how many troops should go in and where they should be deployed, all that. Rumsfeld did it on his own. And you've seen the result. It's been a travesty. It's been a disaster. It's been a horrific experience for the American military, and is dragging the American military down, down, down. You probably heard the letter we read last week from a young man who was there, talking about the morale and talking what's in the telling us what's in the minds of the soldiers who are over there now, knowing that they have been duped. They went there with the most noble of reasons. They thought they were there to help protect America against terrorism. They thought they were there to restore democracy, to put in a democracy in Iraq and help those folks out. And now they found out that our reasons for being there was something altogether different than what they were told in the first place. And very many of them are angry about it and betrayed. And if the ones that are still all in one piece feel angry and betrayed, how in their heart of hearts do some of them in Walter Reed Medical Hospital feel right now, the ones without their arms and legs, or blind, or the other horrible injuries that have come about? I think there are somewhere around 8,000 of our soldiers, is the latest figure I've heard. 8,000 of them that have been wounded so grievously that they had to leave the military because they could no longer physically perform the duties required by the military. All in the word of Donald Rumsfeld. Wouldn't have had to be this way. But it is. It is this way. 866-546-5254. So I don't think Donald Rumsfeld is going to be held in any great esteem in our country when history is written. Don't think anybody in the Bush administration will be. Here we have Colin Powell speaking out now. Colin, where were you when we needed you? Where were you when you occupied a little bit of a bully pulpit anyway, that you could have resigned? You're now saying, Mr. Powell, that you knew that some of this evidence was phony that the Bushes were putting out? You knew it? You're saying it now? And yet you did nothing. And yet you willingly went in front of the UN and shoveled that load of garbage upon the UN to try and get other nations to join us and to try and convince the American people. And Mr. Powell, you did a pretty good job of it, I must say. You convinced a lot of people that this war was necessary. And the worst damage you've done is that a lot of people are still convinced. Even though now you are decrying what you said before, Mr. Powell, there's a lot of people still hanging on the words you said that day in the UN. They heard you support the war, but they have not heard you say, heard you talk about the deceitful circumstances surrounding our decision to go to war in Iraq. That's just like your daily newspaper. Everybody sees the mistake on the front page, but how many people see the retraction on the back page the next day? And so it is with Colin Powell. And so it is with Anthony Zinni. Zinni, it's not so bad. Powell, I don't know how he can live with himself. I really don't. I don't think any of us who have been opposed to this conflict from the very beginning will ever forget the sight of Colin Powell sitting there saying, this is not conjecture, these are facts. When we're hearing now that he knew that some of it wasn't fact. How could you do that? How could you do that? How could you hold such an allegiance toward a man in a suit, a George Bush? How could you do that and overlook your responsibility to the rest of the citizens of this country? I don't understand. I really do not understand how you could forsake your sacred duty to the populace of this country because you wanted to protect one man, George Bush, whom you knew was lying when he presented his case for the war. Mr. Powell, how could you? I don't know. 866-546-5254. Love to hear from you today. We'll be right back.
Now, in my dream, our national bird has become the ostrich. How much can we take? How much can we give? How much is too much, and how much longer can we live? As we turn our backs, turn our eyes, and pretend we don't see. If ignorance is bliss, then full of bliss are we. There's no other way to say it. We've been lied to and misled into another senseless war. How many thousands must lay dead before we wake up from this nightmare and revive the American dream? If we blindly stay the course, this horse will drown us in the stream. Let's take our heads out of the sand and open up our eyes. Let's take our heads out of the sand and finally realize that our tomorrows will depend on what we do today. Don't stay the course on a horse that's going the wrong way. Now the political pollution is so thick and dark and dense, it contaminates and poisons common good and common sense. Ignorance, indifference, and greed so deeply burn. Why must so many be engulfed in flame before they learn? Let's take our heads out of the sand and open up our eyes. Let's take our heads out of the sand and finally realize that our tomorrows will depend on what we do today. Don't stay the course on a horse that's going the wrong way. You don't stay the course on a horse that's going the wrong way.
We're not going to play around. We do have your phone. And if you say anything untoward, obscene, or anything like that, we'll contact your local authorities and you will be held accountable.
What, you ill-mannered sack of crap?
Tell us what you think. Call Guy James now. 1-866-546-5254.
Oh, wouldn't you love to have a few moments alone with with Bill O'Reilly? Oh, my God. Hey, we've get a huge, huge amount of email every day, and I try and answer the ones that that I have time to answer, and the ones that require an answer, and the ones that want an answer. And I beg your pardon if I haven't gotten to everybody's. I do the best I can. You must understand, it takes a long time to prepare for this program every day, and sadly, I don't always have enough time to answer all my email, but I do the best I can, and I hope you're okay with that. I want you to know how much I appreciate the mail you send, and many of you send great research material, and I appreciate that so very much. And we did want to talk a little bit today before we get in the argument about is this a wag the dog scene? Bush let Cheney declassify information from the NIE. That's the National Intelligence Estimate. He let Cheney declassify information from the NIE regarding Iraq and fed that information to friendly reporters. In a federal court, in their filing last week, the prosecutor in the case said Cheney's former chief of staff, Scooter Libby, testified before a grand jury that he was authorized by Bush through Cheney to leak information from a classified document that detailed intelligence agencies' conclusions about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. A lawyer who knows a lot about the case, Den Saturday, said that Bush declassified sensitive intelligence in 2003. And authorized its public disclosure to rebut Iraq war critics. But he did not specifically direct that Libby be the one to disseminate the information. But they did not declassify the entire document. I wonder why not. Just the portions that suited them. Among those was a document published in October of 2002 titled Iraq's Weapons of Mass Destruction Program, which was a public version of the National Intelligence Estimate's main points, but with doubts and the dissents stripped out of it. Now, why did they do that? I think there's no question but what this action is evidence that the Bush administration lied their way into war, even more than the Downing Street memos admit, but Bush didn't hold a press conference and declare the NIE declassified, and let everyone, citizens and reporters, let anybody read it. Instead, he secretly declared it declassified and then let Libby and Cheney leak only select parts of the document to reporters who they knew were sympathetic to their cause. So instead of giving the country, as they're now trying to claim, a complete picture, they're now kind of trying to say they did this for the good of the country. Instead of doing that, they released only the information that helped their cause, even when they knew that information had been challenged or came from, in most cases, unreliable sources. Like, what was his name? Softball, they called him. Curveball? Yeah, curveball. Shalabi. So I guess what I'm getting at here is there's no question but what they lied by omission. They told the country only what was good for their case, and left an impression that the evidence was more reliable and conclusive than it actually was. They lied. That is so clear. And now we're hearing this drumbeat for action against Iran getting started. And serious decisions are going to have to be made in the coming months. Iran is a difficult problem with really no clear choices and nothing that looks like a good option. And right now we have a group of liars running our foreign policy. At this moment, the American people cannot trust that the White House has provided them with any accurate picture of the situation at all. We know now that they lied to get a war they wanted once before. Is there nothing to stop them from doing this again? Whatever action the United States takes against Iran That decision can't take place while Bush is still in office. It's abundantly clear that the American public simply cannot trust that Bush and Cheney are not lying to them, and the country cannot afford to make a decision based on the lies and ambition of this Bush White House. Can't do it. We have no trust. I think we've all seen that now. And enough of us have realized, approximately two-thirds of us have realized, that we cannot place our trust in this man to do something as serious as an attack on Iran, no matter what the reason is. You hear all this talk about mad cow disease. I think we got mad cowboy disease. Well, he claims he's a cowboy. He tries to act like a cowboy. When I was down at his ranch last summer, didn't even look like good cowboy territory there. And I hear he can't even ride a horse. But he's played that for all it's worth. The really scary part about this is this mad cowboy of ours here, this Bush, is absolutely set upon war with Iran. And the real horror story is here that he apparently wants the war to include nuclear weapons. And I know most of you saw that article by investigative journalist Seymour Hersh. It said that Bush and others in the White House have come to view Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad as a potential Adolf Hitler. That's the name they're using. In fact, Hersh quoted a former intelligence official as saying that's the name they're using. A Pentagon advisor is quoted in the article as saying this White House believed that the only way to solve the problem is to change the power structure in Iran, and that means war. The former intelligence official depicts planning as enormous, hectic, and operational. So says Seymour Hersh. And do keep in mind that as much as they want to denigrate Seymour Hersh, the right-wingers do. Saw one of them do it yesterday, saying Hersh is seldom ever right. Au contraire, he's seldom ever wrong on these things. He's got sources that it seems no one else has inside the Beltway. But he said one former defense official said the military planning was premised on a belief that a sustained bombing campaign in Iran will humiliate the religious leadership and lead the public to rise up and overthrow the government. He pointed out that in recent weeks, the president has quietly initiated a series of talks on plans for Iran with a few key senators and members of the House of Representatives, including at least one Democrat. Oh, I wonder who that is. Are his initials JL, do you suppose? Just conjecture on my part. But one of the options under consideration involved the possible use of a bunker buster tactical nuclear weapon, such as the B-61-11, to ensure the destruction of Iran's main centrifuge plant at Natanz. Well, if you look at this whole thing closely and you put aside the morality of a nuclear first strike, this is insane. First of all, these people are idiots if they really believe that a bombing campaign will lead to the overthrow of the Iranian government. And if you carefully look at past history, no bombing campaign in history has led to something like that. The British didn't surrender in the face of the Nazi Blitz. The Japanese didn't surrender in the face of almost uncontested Allied attacks, day after day after day. It wasn't until their emperor realized they couldn't win the war that they gave up. But the bombing didn't make them give up. The nuke finally did. And the Vietnamese, they didn't bow in the face of an onslaught by half of the world's then superpower, us. Bombing campaigns have historically rallied nations to the war. You want to ensure that the mullahs of Iran are never overthrown? Just bomb Iran. The same thing will happen here that happened at 9/11 here. You remember that 81 or 91%, whatever it was, that were behind Bush at the time? The same damn thing will happen in Tehran and all over Iran if we bomb them. These people are idiots if they think a more democratic Iran wouldn't continue to try and get nuclear weapons. Think about it. Three of its regional neighbors, Israel, Pakistan, and India, they have nuclear weapons. And Iran, for whatever reasons, for safety or for national pride, they're going to want to have nuclear weapons. And that dynamic's not going to change just because the mullahs are no longer in control. Adding nuclear weapons to the mix makes things, in my opinion, exponentially worse. At least some of the targets are very near civilian centers. Even now, you know, you take out the mistakes that might be made in delivering those weapons, and even if they stick to just bunker busters, there's still going to be fallout, and innocent civilians are going to die. And the attack itself will reinforce to the point of turning the idea into concrete that the U.S. is engaged in a crusade against Islam. That is what it'll look like. Invading Iraq is bad enough, but nuking a country that could not plausibly be seen as a threat by anyone, Bush might as well deliver a speech from the offices of the Southern Baptist Convention or the Vatican and declare that the U.S. will rid the world of infidels. I don't think anything that could help Al-Qaeda anymore than a nuclear first strike on a Muslim country. Think about that. The consequences of such an insane move are too horrible to think about. Please, all of the people that are thinking, hell yes, let's go, about, think about this. Think about this. The American economy will stop. No oil will be coming out of the Middle East. Did you think about that? Not to Western nations, it won't. Iraq and Iran will simply refuse to sell oil to us and Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states. They won't be able to and survive their own people. Venezuela, I'm sure, will have no problem selling to the EU and the Chinese instead of the U.S. You know, they don't have any problem doing that. Chavez won't have any problem at all doing that. Terrorism will absolutely explode. Because a nuke attack on Iran will just be the proof of the Western intent to destroy Muslims. It'll swell the ranks of those that are willing to become terrorists or to aid terrorists. Southern Iraq, the occupied territories, Israel proper, and the United States will see a wave of suicide bombings and other terrorist attacks, the likes of which the world's never seen before. Muslims right now in that area of the world who are not thinking any such thing will start thinking it then. The economic and diplomatic isolation of the U.S. will be total. No non-Western government will want anything to do with the U.S., particularly as its economy grinds to a halt, and no Western government will survive the ballot box if it remains close to the United States, a nation that nuked a nation that was not threatening it. I just want everybody to think about the far-reaching prospects of what could happen if this insanity continues. This is insane, and it's not even your normal run-of-the-mill insane. This is John Birch Society, Michael Jackson Daycare Center insane. Anyone even suggesting this has proven themselves too stupid, too immoral, and just too damn clueless to be allowed anywhere near anything more dangerous than a piece of string. And I'd probably keep the string away from Cheney. Just how do we get to a place in this country where a person can no longer tell the difference between a news story and a scene out of Dr. Strangelove? How have we gotten there? I'll tell you how we've gotten there. You knew I would. We've gotten there because we let a band of power-hungry imperialist radicals take over our government. That's how we've gotten there. And that's to our everlasting shame that we allowed that to happen. It's just a terrible thing that a good old U.S. of A. I mean, here we are railing against radicals around the world. The mullahs in Iran, Chavez, tar and feathering anybody that we don't agree with around the world, and our own government is being run by people who are actually considering nuking Iran. Wow. That's, wow. I just can't get over it. I really can't. Anyway, we're going to stop for a break right now, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Don't think twice about the life you lead. Must be nice that someone else will bleed. Fear is all around, terror's on the rise. Stars and stripes are waving, fills our patriotic hearts with pride. Don't think twice. Don't think twice about the wars we wage. Don't compromise. No, that's a big mistake. Freedom's on the march. God is on our side. Sure to say a prayer for those courageous souls we sacrifice. Don't think twice. Don't think twice, it isn't up to you. Close your mind, pretend it's just not true. These colors never run, we're not afraid to fight. Especially if someone else is gonna have to pay the price. Don't think twice. Don't think twice. Don't think twice. Don't think twice.
In Iraq, my administration looked at the intelligence, and we saw a threat. Members of Congress looked at the intelligence, and they saw a threat. The United Nations Security Council looked at the intelligence, and it saw a threat.
Very funny.
Tell us what you think. Call Guy James now. 1-866-546-5254.
Oh, yes, do give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. You know, I was thinking the other day, the government's probably more out of control right now than it's ever been. I can't think of a time in my lifetime when there's been such consternation and suspicion and just about any adjective you can use against our government. There've been nitpicking about all of them, to be sure. No government has ever been in when everybody was saying, oh, what a great president we have and what a great administration. I doubt it's ever gotten any higher than about, 60-something percent that can be considered a very successful presidency, I'm sure. Especially these days when you win by 50-point-something to 49-point-something, that'd be considered a great run. But things are out of control. Our budget's out of control. And you know, I was thinking, you know who should be balancing the national budget? I'm serious. I'm serious about this. Mothers. Mothers who run the family finances should be running our national budget. First of all, they wouldn't be spending more than they're earning. Secondly, if there wasn't any money for something, they'd save up for it. Next thing is, and boy, are they good at this, they'd shop around for the best quality at the best price. The bills would always get paid on time. The mothers would encourage savings. And there would be, and you know this to be true, an accounting for the money being spent with an eye on the future, either near or far future, that expenses that might come due. There'd be a kind of a prudence guiding the process that isn't stingy or mean. But trust me, if a woman can figure out how to stretch a week's worth of groceries to the last couple of, maybe last a couple of extra days till the next payday, she probably has a fairly grounded concept of earning and spending and living within her means. And she knows how to say no. Because sometimes you have to delay gratification, and moms always know that. So let's just find a good group of moms, give them the federal checkbook, and I'll bet you in no time at all we'll be in much better shape than we're in right now. What do you think? Let's go to the phones. Hello.
Guy, Dave.
Hi, Dave.
You spell it out so well. I am so totally disgusted with what we have in our government now, the White House. It is just, you know, the amount of harm that they are willing to inflict on us and the world is just, it's unconscionable.
There seems to be no end to it.
You know, the thing to keep it clear for me, connecting the dots on this thing, is that they had a plan, a most ambitious plan. They got together, and they called themselves PNAC, and they spelled out what they hoped to do. And it involved a new world order. It involved a global domination. It involved grabbing control of the oil of the Middle East. And for their own special interest, for their own greed, they were willing to put in jeopardy our military, wipe out any number of locals there to grab it. And they had the planned order there was to go after the axis of evil. And they're actually now running a little bit slow. They're supposed to have already invaded Iran. So to think of it as anything like bungling is to mislead. These are the calculated psychopaths trying to grab everything that there is to grab and control the world, and they don't care how many people suffer. That's
so true, Dave. And the thing is, one of the reasons that a lot of the people on their side, the fundies, for example, think because God has blessed America and because we're the most blessed country on earth. You know, isn't that something? We say that, and I do hope God does bless America, but not to the exclusion of the rest of the nations on earth. And that's the way Americans act sometimes. Like we're somehow, like our nation within the borders of this country are somehow endowed by the Creator to dictate to the rest of the world how things should be. And I doubt it's that way.
Now, to me, I don't see how anybody could remain so unaware of evidence as to still see redeeming qualities in these neocons that have stolen our government. I just don't see how they can do it. And I just listened to that letter you read. That kind of mentality might be capable of listening only to Rush Limbaugh and Fox and believing that that's what the world is like that he's living in. But
hey, Dave, you got to go to that website, ShellyTheRepublican.com.
We'll do it.
You got to see it. You really do. It'll make the hair stand up in the back of your neck.
You're speaking to a lot of people, but I wish we could have you talking to all of America. You spell it out better than just about anybody I know of.
Well, we try to, Dave. Hey, thanks for your call.
Thank you, Guy.
For those of you who may not know what Dave, and I know almost all my listeners, being the best informed audience in all of the media, without a doubt, I know almost everyone knows what PNAC is. We often talk about that. There are probably a few of you sitting there going, what is he talking about? Those letters stand for Progress for a New American Century. And if you look that up on the internet, do a Google, and you can go to their website. And you think we're just talking about that this is small talk, that we've made this up? You think this is just some rumor out here that people are talking about this PNAC group that plan on taking over the world? Oh, no. It is not some rumor. Their website is up. That was signed by Jeb Bush, George Bush, Paul Wolfowitz, I think maybe Richard Perlstein. I can't name all the signatories on it right now. But this is a treatise that they came up with back in the 90s, I guess. Even the 80s, I think. I'm not sure exactly what year started, but let me tell you this. They took their proposal to Bush 1, to Daddy Bush, about this stuff. And he left orders in the White House to don't let any of those people come back in his office and try and present this stuff to him again. At least he had the good sense to see these people, their ideas as, well, they're unthinkable. It is absolutely unthinkable to me that one country would consider taking... I mean, you stop and think of the people over the years that have tried to do that and think who these people are. Think about it. You got your Caesars and your Genghis Khans and your Napoleons and your Stalins and those people and your Hitlers. Those are the people that have had these ideas in their heads over the years. These are the people that have caused wars over the years. Not to be content within their own national borders, they had to go take somebody else's. You know, some more of man's inhumanity towards man. We watch these... all of us, I'm sure, watch these shows on TV, the Animal Planet and all those. We see the venomous snakes and the tigers and the rhinos and all the animals on Earth. They're deadly, but there's no one on Earth, no creature on Earth, not one of God's creatures is more lethal than humans. Why? I often wonder why we were given the capacity to be this way. Why were we given the capacity to covet the land of another? Why? I don't know. I'll never know the answer to that, but and neither will you, I don't suppose. But it's one of those great mysteries of life. You know, man does somehow have dominion over the animal kingdom and all, but I would submit to you that man is, at times, a whole lot more dangerous than the most dangerous creature in the animal kingdom. And so here we are with Americans now thinking like that. This is our Genghis Khan group. This is our Stalin group. This is our group that decided that they deserve to take over the world. Where will it end? The problem is, they never got such a very good foothold in our government. But they found a stooge. And I'm sorry, but that's what he is. You can see that. They found a stooge that will willingly go along with whatever they want so that he can satisfy whatever little psychological needs he's got up his mind. He'll go along and has gone along so far. And I think it's becoming more and more clear all the time, and we predicted it, and many of you knew it to start out with, but it's becoming crystal clear now that Dick Cheney, who's involved with this group, Dick Cheney is calling the shots. I don't think there's any doubt about that whatsoever. Dick Cheney has been calling the shots. Whatever he has wanted so far, he has gotten. When Colin Powell was Secretary of State, whatever noble ambitions he might have had to be Secretary of State, he was totally and 100% ineffective because Dick Cheney saw to it. There wasn't going to be any State Department initiatives, anything, any shuttle diplomacy, any kind of diplomacy that was done without the okay of Dick Cheney, and in most cases, this PNAC group is not, I repeat, not interested in any kind of diplomacy. You can take that State Department building and fill it with shelled corn for all they care, because that's all it's good for. The only thing they see, any benefit they might see from our State Department, is whatever little bit of spying that they might be able to do on the sly around the country. But as far as being a department that promotes peace, no, not anymore. And it's particularly distressing when we know that we have a president in this country that doesn't know how to talk to people. And he won't talk to the people he's mad at. Think about this. This is a man in charge, sworn an oath to take care of 280 or 90 million, however many of us there are now, to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. So help me God. He raised his hand, put one hand on the Bible, and he said that. And it's a heavy burden, I know. Oh, I don't know. How would I ever know? How would any man who's never been in those shoes understand the burden that comes with that job? But if you can't handle the burden, you shouldn't take the job. And if you've got a psyche like Bush's, you should not be in the job. He doesn't talk to the North Koreans. He didn't talk to the people in the insurgency. When the history is done, there were incredible efforts by the insurgency leaders in the summer of 2003. Incredible efforts by them. And I'm talking about the Iraqi insurgency, the former Sunni generals and the Sunni and Baathist leaders who were happy to see Saddam go. Very happy to see him go, but did not want us there. They wanted to talk to us. Bush wouldn't. All of our military leaders were contacted. Nobody wanted to talk to the insurgency. He doesn't talk to the president of Syria. In fact, he specifically rejects any overtures from al-Assad, from Syria, to us. And he doesn't talk to the Iranians. There's been no bilateral communications whatsoever. We know that Iran has come hat in hand to us. A former National Security Council advisor who worked in the White House, trying to think of his name, Clint Leverett. He's an ex-CIA analyst who's now working at the Brookings Institute. He wrote a piece about a month or so ago, maybe 6 weeks ago, I'm not sure, in the New York Times, that described specific offers by the Iranians to come and let's deal. That's what the Iranians were saying. Let's deal on all the issues. I'm even told that they were willing to talk about recognizing Israel. And the White House doesn't talk. And it's not that he doesn't talk, it's that nobody pressures him to talk. There's no pressure from the media, no pressure from the Congress. Here's a president that won't talk to people that he's walking us into a confrontation with. How bizarre is that? Maybe there are things on this earth. Maybe there are confrontations that cannot, under any circumstances, be stopped with diplomacy and talking and sitting down at the table and hashing things out. Maybe there are things that you just can't. But my God, you got to try. Don't you have to try? And wouldn't you expect, at the very least, the President of the United States would do his utmost? Send some emissaries to these countries. Do it on the sly. Do it under the cover of darkness, under the cloak of secrecy. However you have to do it, but do it. There's no shame in talking to the Iranians. None at all. There would have been no shame in talking to the insurgency, as we well know. Dismissing the army and the Baathists and sending them all home with their weapons intact and a nasty attitude toward America just wasn't the best thing, was it? All these people wanted was for Saddam to be gone and to allow them to run their own country. But we know we had the arrogance and the hubris to go in there and have our way with them, and to hell with anything they wanted to think. And you know, it goes on and on and on in this Bush administration. I cannot forget that incident with the bridge there in Iraq that needed to be fixed. We blew the bridge over the Euphrates, one of the bridges. And an Iraqi construction company that built the bridge came to our government and said, we'll rebuild it, and they bid something like $300,000 to... Oh, no. No, 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 no. It was given to Kellogg, Brown, and Root, and they charged something like $14 million for it. We have embarrassed those people. We have humiliated those people. We have killed those people at will. And we have made a great many of them hate us. And it didn't have to be. And it didn't have to be. And it shouldn't have been. But we were stuck with leadership like we have right now, unwilling to even talk to them. There are some things on this earth that just cannot be explained, and I do not understand why we as a nation allowed this to happen. It's probably the worst disappointment in our government that I have ever had, most certainly. In the people. The people allowed this to happen, and so many of them did it cheering. Yeah, let's go get them. Let's go kick their ass. Let's bomb them. Let's make it. Remember that? Let's glass them. Let's make Baghdad a parking lot. You remember all that? Forget the fact that there were millions of innocent people just wanting to live and let live in Baghdad. But there was that kind of talk coming from these militaristic hawks in our country. A lot of them that knew what they were doing because it was a war profiteering situation for them. And a lot of people, the populace of this country, a lot of the people that didn't know what they were doing. They did it out of ignorance and stupidity and being uninformed. A war that appeals to the base instincts of the American people. I am so regretful that we allowed something like this to happen in our country. I'm ashamed. I'm ashamed that in what we have always thought is the most civilized nation on earth, the most decent, honorable, and good nation on earth, that we went along with this, and that there wasn't a terrible hue and cry coming up from the people of this country, but it just didn't happen. Well, we're going to pause for a break at the top of the hour. News service is out of business today, so we'll just pause and have something for you, and we'll be back shortly.
You're listening to The Guy James Show.
4 years ago, UN inspectors concluded that Iraq had failed to amount for large stockpiles of chemical and biological weapons. In last month's declaration, Iraq again failed to account for those weapons.
Biological weapons, with respect to chemical weapons, we know they not only have had them, but that they've used them.
The real threat to peace is Saddam Hussein and his possession of weapons of mass destruction.
Saddam Hussein has got weapons of mass destruction. Saddam Hussein is a threat to America.
We're resting our case on the fact that Saddam Hussein has developed weapons of mass destruction, has them in his possession.
We just discovered undeclared chemical warheads in Iraq.
What happened to the 26,000 liters of anthrax? What happened to the botulin? What happened to the 1.5, 1.5 tons of VX? What happened to the sarin? Proof that he is not disarmed.
I believe Saddam Hussein is a threat to the American people. I believe he's a threat to the neighborhood in which he lives. I've got good evidence to believe that.
The declaration that he made is proof positive that he's withheld information about his weapons of mass destruction program.
Saddam Hussein possesses some of the world's deadliest weapons.
It's because Iraq possesses weapons of mass destruction, and that is the core of the issue.
We're threatened by the spread of chemical and biological and nuclear weapons. Every free nation is a potential target.
The world is increasingly seeing this from the United States' point of view, that Saddam Hussein must disarm.
Saddam Hussein must disarm himself of all weapons of mass destruction. Saddam Hussein is not disarming.
He's not disarming.
Saddam Hussein is not disarming. He is a danger to the world.
We know what a disarmed country looks like. And Iraq doesn't look like that.
Secretary of State Powell, present information and intelligence about Iraq's illegal weapons programs.
My colleagues, every statement I make today is backed up by sources, solid sources. These are not assertions. What we're giving you are facts and conclusions based on solid intelligence. There can be no doubt that Saddam Hussein has biological weapons and the capability to rapidly produce more, many more. And he has the ability to dispense these lethal poisons and diseases in ways that can cause massive death and destruction. Most of the launchers and warheads had been hidden in large groves of palm trees. This is evidence, not conjecture. This is true. This is all well documented.
Our intelligence sources tell us that he has attempted to purchase high-strength aluminum tubes suitable for nuclear weapons production.
We do have evidence that they have had a nuclear program that was robust.
Saddam Hussein is determined to get his hands on a nuclear bomb. He's made repeated covert attempts to acquire high-specification aluminum tubes.
Saddam Hussein recently sought significant quantities of uranium from Africa.
With respect to the uranium, it was the information that we had. We provided it. That information is an accurate find. We're continuing to examine this issue.
We have never rested our case on nuclear weapons programs in Iraq on this issue about some uranium from Niger.
After Secretary of State Powell's presentation to the United Nations Security Council, the world knows that Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction.
Secretary Powell described to the United Nations, we have found the bio truck. That's proof perfect that the intelligence in that regard was right on target. I can't discuss all intelligence information. And, of course, we've already had the successes in finding the bio trucks.
Leaving Saddam Hussein in possession of weapons of mass destruction for a few more months or years is not an option.
The United States will lead a coalition of the willing to disarm the Iraqi regime of weapons of mass destruction.
War is the only option to protect the American people in the region and the world from Saddam Hussein, who is not disarmed.
Iraq will be disarmed.
There's a smoking gun, and it involves weapons of mass destruction. They're within 15 minutes of having a nuclear weapon.
We don't know to what extent there may or may not be weapons of mass destruction used. We don't know exactly how long it would take to find weapons of mass destruction and destroy them. There's so many variables that the numbers of possible point answers create a range that simply isn't useful. It's simply not knowable.
I am pleased with the progress that we're making in the early stages
of the war to rid Iraq of its weapons of mass destruction.
This is a war to go after one regime led by Saddam Hussein that possesses weapons of mass destruction that can take the lives of millions.
We've destroyed the base of a terrorist group in northern Iraq that sought to attack America and Europe with deadly poisons. 1 month ago, that country was an arsenal of weapons. Today, the world is safer. Taking every action we can to prevent the Iraqi regime from using its hidden weapons of mass destruction, to prevent the launch of missiles and chemical or biological weapons. Terrorists will no longer have a source of weapons of mass destruction in the regime that used to be in Iraq, because the regime that used to be in Iraq is no longer.
I think it is something that will be found. We've always said that we have information that they have weapons of mass destruction. What we have is intelligence about their having it. Whether it was specific location or not is often not the case.
And there is not a doubt but that we will, over a period of time, find people who can tell us where to go look for those things.
We have high confidence that Iraq did indeed have weapons of mass destruction, and nothing has changed our confidence that they will be found. We have high confidence that they have weapons of mass destruction. That is what this war was about and is about.
It obviously is important to find them. Those capabilities, chemical and biological weapons, and it's hard to find them if they're buried under rubble. We don't know. We've got a good group of people, this interagency group, CIA, FBI, DOD, DIA, working out there, and they're collecting things, they're looking for things. You'll be told if we do find something. So, in good time.
We are not a third-rate intelligence agency. There was nothing doctored in those tapes or in anything else we presented.
I believe that the presentation made by Secretary Powell was accurate. And will be proved to be accurate.
Already we are seeing important progress in Iraq. Oil, Iraqi oil, is flowing again.
Does not relate to oil. It just plain doesn't. The vast majority of Iraq's oil fields were not burned. And the country's oil wealth has been preserved.
Come on, that entire notion is nothing but nonsense. It's stuff of conspiracy theories, and I don't deal in that. We do indeed have concerns about a country that is awash in gas and oil.
One of the big concerns early on was the southern oil fields. I had frequently talked about the southern oil fields, or oil fields in general, and at least in the south, they are secure. And that is positive news for all of us.
I certainly had nothing to do with providing any chemicals or biologicals or any kind of weapons to Iraq.
I had nothing to do with helping Saddam Hussein and his regime against Iran.
Nonsense. It has nothing to do with oil. Literally.
Country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Oh, yes, back with you and feeling so good right now. Yes, something had been troubling me almost for a full day. Troubling me deeply. And I haven't let on to anybody else that's been troubling me so much. But it's certainly worn on my mind. And it's over now. I had a popcorn haul stuck behind one of my teeth that I tried everything that you can possibly try to get it out, short of going and getting a hammer and a chisel, but finally got it during that break. Now that's earth-shaking news, isn't it? Bet you thought you'd never hear that. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, I'm free of that popcorn haul. Do you ever have one of those that you just about wore your tongue out trying to just get it over there and get it out? Well, we did, and we're wholeless now, and I'm so happy. Just a quick note. People send me things, and I'm glad you sent this one to me today. Someone sent me. You're going to love this. You know, most of us on the left, one of our favorite pundits, writers, whatever you want to call her, that we have great respect and reverence for is, of course, Ann, the man, Coulter. And it turns out that she tried to vote over there in Palm Beach County. You know, she got a big fancy mansion that she's built with on the money from the Richard Mellon Scaife support of all of her books. And so she's got a big mansion over there, probably the homeliest woman on television. God, she creeps me out. She really does. But a more hateful person has never lived, I don't think, in the so-called media. I don't know what you call her, really. An author, a columnist, I'm not sure. Even some of the far-right publications that she's been published in have kicked her out because she's too radical for them. But it turns out she did vote, someplace not in her own precinct, which is against the law, and she violated a couple of different election laws that way. But one of the things I found interesting here is that she did not answer question number 15 on her Palm Beach County, Florida voter registration. And I find this particularly interesting considering who we're talking about here. We're talking about Ann the Man Coulter. And that number 15 question is to indicate your sex, male or female. And she did not fill out that part. And as you well know, we've all made allegations and had speculation and conjecture and all about Coulter's gender identity. Perhaps she does too. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I'm just saying. 866-546-5254. I'm having a good time here today. I am. I don't know why. I'm just feeling good today, particularly since I got that popcorn hole. Well, anyway. You know, I promised you before the show today that we were going to talk, we were going to discuss this wag the dog theory. And I wanted to try and come at it from both directions, because I think it can be successfully argued that it is and that it is not a true wag the dog scenario here concerning the Iranian crisis that's come up right now. Is this just a manufactured crisis? Is it a convenient way just to change the subject? And I mean that. Is Iran a convenient way to change the subject from all the horrors that Bushko has perpetrated, that we're having serious trouble gagging down? Don't you think it's convenient for the talk now to center around a possible invasion of Iran in the future, when we currently have on the table the Iraq debacle, rising gas prices, the Valerie Plame mess, the New Orleans mess, the Republican corruption, which is massive, the massive budget deficit? We've got before us how Bush lied to the American people in trying to sell them on the Iraq war. So with all of that, and God knows that ought to be enough for any administration to try and handle, why are we seeing Iran being hyped now? Bringing up Iran now, if we're going to go at this from the positive angle that this is a wag-the-dog scenario, bringing it up now is a convenient way to help the Republicans in the fall congressional elections. And I've got some suggestions on what we should be stressing to put a halt to this latest insanity. I don't care who you are. I don't know. I don't care which side of the fence you're on, whether you're a lifelong Republican or a yellow dog Democrat. I don't care what you are. It doesn't matter. George Bush is the wrong man to be launching yet another war. America simply can't afford another rash Bush misadventure. Actually, there is no right man to be launching yet another war. We can't have another war, period. But especially, we can't have George Bush involved in it. You know, slow down. We've got 10 years. America's intelligence community estimates that Iran is still 10 years away from building a nuclear weapon. And so many of you are saying, oh, well, wait, they said they've got the fissionable material now. No, it's a 3.5% material. 3.5% at risk. They've got to get it up to 99 to make a good bomb, and it's going to take them many thousands of centrifuges and time to do that. So, no, they're not close. And since we've got 10 years, can't we at the very least wait 7 months until the congressional elections this fall? Think this over. America needs a Congress that's going to look into Bush's claims about Iran's nuclear program and determine if those claims are even credible. Doesn't this rush to judgment on Iran seem odd to you? And I hate to go back to it, but can you say vast right-wing conspiracy? Doesn't this whole thing smack of let's change the subject while we, the Republicans, regroup so we can lie our way back into the good graces of the American public before the election? Is it ridiculous to consider any congressional resolution on Iran until after the fall elections? What's the hurry, George? George Bush proved with Iraq that he's got no intention of using diplomacy to avoid war. There is no reason we need to even go to war until Bush has left office. George Bush has proven that he's unable to wage war effectively. And the caveat to that is, really, there is no reason we need to go to war now, period. But especially not George Bush. The people on the right are fond of saying that anything we come up with on the left to talk and criticize this administration is because we hate George Bush. Let me admit something. I'm getting there. I am getting there. I don't like that I feel the way I do about this man. But this is my country, too. And he's doing his damnedest to destroy it. And I don't like it. And I don't feel very kindly toward this man. Bush is not the president we want exercising the nuclear option. There are credible news reports that Bush isn't just considering nuclear weapons against Iran, but he's strongly leaning toward that option. He's not just considering, he's actually thinking about doing it. We don't want anyone exercising the nuclear option, period. You know, Bush either lied to us, or he was unable to determine the truth about Iraq's WMD program, which we now know didn't exist. Why, in the name of God, should we believe claims from the same president and the same intelligence agencies about Iran's WMD program? Why? Give me one good reason why we should believe him at all now on this. What military and what money are we going to use to launch a war against Iran? There's about 90 million people in Iran. They have weapons. They're going to fight back. Our troops are stuck in Iraq, and Bush says he refuses to withdraw them. So what troops are we going to use to invade Iran? And another thing. Why is it always us? Why is it always us? If Iran is such a threat, then why not let the Europeans and the Russians and the Chinese take care of it? Clearly, none of those countries want nuclear Iran on their back porch. But I'm asking, do these points make sense to you? I just can't see why the American people aren't clamoring for some sort of a moratorium on this whole Iran business until we can come to a more clear assessment of the situation. But then I think we all know why the rush is on. First of all, the PNAC group, the Progress for New American Century Boys, they want to get this done before the public catches on. And secondly, changing the subject right now would be the best possible thing that could happen to the Republican Party for the fall elections. If the election is held under present circumstances, they'll fall from power, and it should be apparent by this and other outrageous maneuvers that they will not go quietly into the night. Can you say Diebold? I'm asking, do you think I'm being too cynical here? Or do you think my cynicism is well-founded? I do. I wouldn't put anything past these people. They have shown us time and again that they're willing to do anything to get their way. I talked to somebody today that poo-pooed the idea, Bush wouldn't. He wouldn't do. Nah, he wouldn't nuke Iran. Come on, he wouldn't do that. And I asked the gentleman, so why? What kind of evidence you got that he wouldn't? We've got plenty of evidence that he might. And we've got evidence that shows that they're considering it. But what is there about George Bush that makes you think he wouldn't think twice about doing this? What is there about George Bush that makes you think he gives a damn about the collateral damage of nuclear weapons, whether it be tactical nuclear weapons, bunker busters, the daisy cutters, whatever kind of bombs they drop? What makes you think he gives a damn about collateral damage, which includes thousands and maybe hundreds of thousands, and in the case of Iran, maybe even millions of innocent people dying? Tell me what is there about George Bush that makes you think that he wouldn't do it? I see no evidence to make me think that he wouldn't do it. I'd say in the first year of his administration, I thought he was just a bumbling idiot, maybe harmless. And as time has gone on, he's shown us that he is not harmless by any stretch of the imagination. I am confounded as to how this man, well, not really, as to how he got elected. How did he get to be a governor of Texas? Money. Period. How did he get to be president of the United States? Money. And apparently some access to voting machines. Be that as it may, regardless of the Diebold machines and the other voting machines, he still got a hell of a lot of votes. Maybe he didn't win the election. Maybe he didn't win either one of them, but he still got an awful lot of votes. And I wish somebody, anybody, could please make me understand how anybody could have gone to the polls and pulled the lever for this man, knowing his background. Do you remember when he got up in front of the public and bragged about his MBA in business? Anybody remember that? Here's a guy that was a financial failure in every business he ever tried, and he got up and bragged that he had an MBA, and wasn't it going to be good for America? And I also remember him bragging about, whoa, won't it be good to have two men, him and Dick Cheney, as president, who were intimately familiar with the oil business, and bragging that he knew how to talk to the Saudis. Boy, I'll tell you, whatever he said to the Saudis, they didn't pay a whole lot of attention to it, now have they? Gas went up again today. Hallelujah. And then again, you know, I mentioned a little while ago, I mentioned this vast right-wing conspiracy. You know, people poo-pooed Hillary Clinton for saying that a long time ago. Come on, you know it's true now, don't you? Even those of you on the right, you know it. You know the Richard Mellonscapes, and you know the think tanks that they carefully cultivated over the years. The many, many hundreds of millions of dollars they spent on taking over the media. Yes, the liberal media that they took over. The liberal media. Ah, yes, that good old liberal media. And that reminds me. Speaking of that liberal media, CNN, who is so often accused by those of the Fox that CNN isn't far right enough for them. I mean, Fox is off the chart. And anybody that isn't equal to Fox, you know, Fox might as well have a studio in the basement of the White House. I mean, I don't see why they don't. You know, back when Charlton Heston bragged that if Bush got elected, they'd be able to have an office, the NRA would be able to have an office in the basement of the White House. Well, I don't see why Fox doesn't have one of their studios in there. But here we got CNN, which used to provide somewhat of a balance to Fox's perverted right-wing neo-Republican Christian malarkey. And a guy by the name of Scroff sent me this, and I thank you. They've decided to go to the dark side. They already let Aaron Brown go late last year and replaced him with that O'Reilly wannabe, Anderson Cooper, who doesn't amount to a patch on Brown's shorts. The latest word is that they're hiring what I consider to be maybe next to Michael Savage, the most obnoxious man in the media today. This article I've got here calls him an opportunistic parasite, Glenn Beck. Do all of you have Glenn Beck on the radio around where you're at? This is the guy who said the New Orleans survivors were scumbags. He'll say anything to get a reaction. But CNN's hired him. He's going to have a new show starting in May sometime. They're supposed to be the granddaddy of 24-hour news, the first and the original. Glenn Beck is not a newsman. He's a sideshow carny. And to make things worse, CNN has also hired Bill Bennett. Bill Slots Machine Bennett as a political analyst. Bill Bennett. Yeah. Wild Bill Bennett, the guy who lost millions in Las Vegas. And here we have the New York Times that held back that wiretapping story for over a year. And now this latest money ratings grab, we can start saying goodbye to any kind of real journalism in this country. And the real good journalists know that. They know what's happened. And a lot of them are afraid to speak out. They're going to lose their jobs. I don't know. I don't know. 866-546-5254. Well, I said I wanted to look at this wag the dog thing from both sides. Let's do. By now, I think almost all of you have heard, at least heard of Seymour Hersh's scary article in the New Yorker. If you've only read summaries or excerpts from it, you really should go read the whole thing. It's not that long. And if you haven't read it or heard of it, Hersh says that the Bush administration is planning for war with Iran, not merely planning for contingencies, which every administration should do, but actually planning for a bombing campaign in the near future to destroy their nuclear capabilities and bring about a regime change. And his sources say, Hersh's sources say, that the Bushes are seriously considering using tactical thermonuclear weapons to get some of Iran's underground research facilities. And really and truly, when you look at it, when you look at his record, the most frightening thing about this article is that Seymour Hersh has a record of being right about these things. He's got great contacts. Not the most pleasant man in the world, but he's got great contacts. But some of us on the left, some people on the left, including myself, are looking at this as a possible wagging the dog stunt aimed at next fall's election. And while I think that Bush is also wagging the dog, I think we make a mistake of underestimating maybe just how insane Bush is if we look at this as only wagging the dog. Keep in mind that while Bush used the run-up to the invasion of Iraq in a wagging the dog manner during the 2002 midterm election, the election wasn't his primary reason for the war or even his top three reasons. And you know his top three reasons. He wanted to be the guy who got rid of Saddam. And there was some neocon nonsense about making the Middle East a happy land of flowers and ponies and all that. And he really wanted to be the guy who got rid of Saddam. That's your three reasons. Bush was planning that war long before he was appointed president. The 2002 election and 9/11 merely provided a convenient time and the excuse to do it. That's all 9/11 was for him. And, of course, I don't have to tell you that. The PNAC group, they know that. They've said it. That was their Pearl Harbor. Hey, we're going to pause for a short break, and we'll be right back.
Americans to give 4,000 years, 4,000 hours over the next, the rest of your life of service to America. That's what I asked. I said, 4,000 hours.
The man's a menace.
We think so too. Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
Hey, and we're back for the last half hour of the program today. Good to have all of you along with us. My, my, my. Big audience today. Glad to know that. I guess you're content in letting me do all the talking today, though. Why are you doing that? I don't know. We were talking about this wag the dog thing, and you know, wagging the dog used to be called social imperialism. And the idea was, and it's probably a good idea if you were the leader, the idea was that a leader would engage in foreign adventures in order to distract the public from his domestic problems. That is, it was imperialism for probably purely social reason as opposed to economic or strategic reasons. And, of course, in classical social imperialism, the foreign adventure is supposed to be successful. The leader's successes abroad were supposed to overcome his failures at home. Hadn't worked out that way. Bush has managed to turn that formula right on its head. And if Iraq is social imperialism, it works by being a failure so large that it makes his failures at home look, well, they look insignificant in comparison. You know, my dad had a theory that the best treatment for a headache was a swift kick in the knee. Your knee had hurt so bad that you'd forget about your headache. We always went to mom when we had a headache. But Iran is even less likely to work as some sort of social imperialism than Iraq did. And are we supposed to get to forget about his last failed foreign adventure by going on to an even bigger foreign adventure that's even less likely to succeed? Bush became president with a very short and simple agenda, and after using his position to reward and enrich all of his cronies and supporters, he only had two items on which to base his legacy, his historic legacy. He wanted to cut taxes and get rid of Saddam. Actually, neither one of those has worked out very well for him. Not very well at all. Let's go to the phone. Hi, who's with us today?
Hey, guy, Mike from San Jose. How you doing?
Hi, Mike.
I'm looking at an article that's on Associated Press. It's actually Yahoo News. It came out 9 minutes ago. It says McCain warns of rough going for GOP. And you want to look at an article that not only explains the current situation, but will make your head spin. This is the one. You know, he's talking about how we have a 25% approval rating, the GOP and Congress. We're going to have a tough race in 2006 because the country is not happy with us. But there's a quote in this article. It says, McCain expressed support for President Bush's tough stance seeking sanctions against Iran for uranium enrichment and for keeping open the option of military action. And then there's a quote from, it says, former state legislator Rosemary Thompson. She's talking about McCain now. She says, it's honesty. You may not agree with him, but you know where he stands.
Oh,
well,
my
that's exactly
God.
What I mean, did you get chills for a minute?
Oh.
That's exactly what they said about Bush. That's the number one talking point of Bush, of he won't waver and he's firm in his resolve, and you may not agree with him, but you know where he stands. And so now they're saying this about McCain. And there's also another article out there on the Yahoo News today from the Christian Coalition saying McCain's got no support in this group, and I don't know how you think you're going to get elected by walking around us, but good luck. So on one hand, we know the situation in Iraq. We know how many people are dying. We know about the debt. We know about the economy. We know about, you know, the vanishing middle class. We know. All this stuff we know. But on the other hand, we keep propping up Junior's image and the talking points. And I don't know if you saw those photos the other day of Poppy and Barr and Pickles out there donating Junior's boyhood home in Texas.
Yeah.
Yeehaw. Did you see those?
Yeah.
He's from Connecticut.
That's right.
Let's have a ceremony for the Connecticut House. And on Democratic Underground, somebody had posted something out there. I posted all the photos, and somebody posted a response saying, did they put up a sign on the spot on the property where he used to blow up the frogs to commemorate that, too?
That's good. That's good.
You sit there and you shake your head, and it's like, I don't know what to say. I mean, I've been listening for a little bit. I just got in about 45 minutes ago, so I've been listening to about a half hour of your show, and you know, I know that you're at the same point that a lot of us are of, you know, what's it going to take? When are people going to just sit up and say enough is enough? But I don't know. I hear what you're saying about the military and the money and everything else, and do I think that will be the thing that keeps us from going into Iran? No, I don't.
No.
Because I think he wants it so bad. Did you ever see the movie New Jack City?
I don't think so. No.
Okay, there's a line at the end of that movie, which I can't quote to you on the air because you'd have to censor me. But it's basically Ice-T has been chasing Wesley Snipes through this whole movie, and he knows that Wesley Snipes is the guy that killed his mother. And he's got Wesley Snipes. He's on top of him, on top of this stack of trash, and he wants to shoot him. And the cops are saying, don't do it, don't do it. He's got to go to jail, don't do it. And Ice-T's just looking at Wesley Snipes with that gun in his face. He says, I want to shoot you so bad, my blank is blank. So you can fill in the blanks, or you can ask someone who saw the movie what the quote is. But I think Bush's blank is blank over Iran, and it has been for years. And I don't think it has anything to do with the PNAC stuff. I think PNAC is secondary to Bush's desire to do this. I think Bush truly is delusional. You had the psychiatrist or psychologist on the show. Was it the guy who wrote Bush on the Couch or someone else?
Yeah, Bush's Brain.
Bush's Brain.
He wrote the first book about that a couple of years ago.
Okay, well, the book Bush on the Couch is the one that you want to go to Amazon and take a look at and think about reading, because that's the truly frightening one, where it talks about, you know, the issues with his father, the issues with his mother, all of these other things. And Iran just so perfectly fits into the picture that I think it's a happy coincidence for Bush that he's got all the PNAC people around him wanting to do it, but I don't think he's doing it because of them. I don't think he's a puppet. I think he is an idiot. I think he is dangerous, all the stuff you said a few minutes ago. But I don't think anybody's handing him an agenda. I think they found somebody who already agreed with the agenda they wanted to move forward. And if you believe the Bush's Brain stuff, they just groomed him to the point where people would vote for him, or Diebold would fill in the blanks.
Yeah, well, you know, as long as you and I are getting all psychological on people right now, you know, a lot of people have commented on Bush's messianic streak. And you know, they're saying the 9/11, the shock of that was something of a transforming moment for Bush. He seems to truly believe that he's on some sort of a mission from God to rid the world of evildoers and heal the Middle East. And this alone, to me, this alone makes him a frighteningly dangerous man. However, we all need to remember that he's also an incompletely reformed alcoholic. And while he may be dry, he's never dealt with the cause of his addiction, and
right.
Such addictive people often turn to some other destructive addiction, and his might be war.
Right. Well, there's a whole list of stuff. I mean, the thing is, one thing that alarms me is that many, many times, I mean, another set of photos yesterday that I didn't post on Democratic Underground, simply because they disgusted me. I didn't want to post them, but it was Pappy and Barr again. These two are like on the Barrapalooza World Tour or something. They're everywhere. You can't get away from these two old fossils, but they're out there with Billy Graham. And I mean, as a Christian, it's a struggle for me, because I look at Billy Graham and his life and his work and everything, and I can't put him in a category with like the Bush family and say, I don't want to hear anything out of Billy Graham. I regret the fact that they have associated themselves with him. I regret the fact that he allows himself to be associated with them. But the point is, there have been many, many, many times when Bush talks about being born again and this and that and whatever, where he's never actually come right out and said, I received Jesus through Billy Graham.
Right.
But other people have said that, and he has not corrected them.
Right.
It's a very convenient mistake for other people to make, and he just sits back and lets them make it. And the truth of the matter is, Bush was converted by a guy who had a circus tent. Bush was converted by a guy who had like a 6-foot Jesus statue on a little cart that he wheeled all over the country and had revival meetings in a revival tent. And he met this guy in the coffee shop of like a Holiday Inn, and that's when they talked about him getting baptized.
That's right. I can't think of that guy's name. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, and sometime I'll find it and I'll post it in like your daily thread on DU or whatever, but I mean, that is the truth of the matter. But that's the whole, down to the fake Texas thing, down to the born-again Christian thing. You know, there was a thing on Huffington Post the other day where somebody had put something out there about George Bush is really a Christian, and I don't think so. And the guy was a Christian who was writing it, and it's like, hey, based on what I've been taught and based on every other Christian I see around me and based on this guy's words and deeds, do the math. You know?
Well, and I think he's also, I've tried to psychoanalyze this guy too, and that's my hobby, I guess. Bush is behaving like a problem gambler. You know, one type of problem gambler doesn't just play games of chance or continue long after they should stop. This type of problem gamblers, they escalate their bets beyond all reason, and their response to losing a bet isn't to stop or play more cautiously. It's just the opposite. They make their bets larger, in hopes of scoring one big win that'll wipe off all of their past losses and propel them to the top. You know, look at Bush's Iran strategy through that lens.
Right.
He's lost everything else. Maybe this is going to be the big win that pulls him out of the depths.
Well, too, and another thing that dovetails nicely with what you just said is another thing that I've posted on a regular basis on Democratic Underground is the notion that, as I see it, that, that Bush really is Captain Queeg from Caine Mutiny in a lot of ways. And what's happening now is whether it's the media or his own people, you know, what a hero Colin Powell is now that he's out of the way of any kind of repercussion to say, I didn't believe it back then.
Yeah.
I went along with it, but I didn't believe it. But what's happening is people are lining up and they're challenging what he's saying, and they're saying, excuse me, Captain Queeg, but you're going to drive the ship like right into disaster. And I'm the captain. I know what I'm doing. So now Bush is under the microscope. And he's got a little Scotty McClellan out there doing his daily tap dance for him, and Condi saying, you know, we got to be severe with Iran. We can't mess around with these people. We got to lay down the law and just, you know, and meanwhile get Playboy and Penthouse out of the newsstand. I don't like it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, crazy stuff, guy.
I know. It truly is. It truly is.
Anyway, listen, have a great day, huh?
Hey, thanks for your input.
You bet. Take care.
Very good.
Bye.
Yeah, I mean, you know, everything Mike said is absolutely true. We sit here and we try and psychoanalyze this guy, but, you know, according to Cy Hirsch, the Bush team's planning on, you know, they're planning to go to war with a much larger power than Iraq, using our army that's run down now. Well, where Iraq was a country, you know, it's so different. I mean, they were completely divided by religion and language and culture. Iran, on the other hand, a country of about close to 90 million, it's got a large majority united by one of the oldest and proudest nationalism on the planet, and a comparatively small minority problem. So invading Iran could have disastrous results in the Muslim world, maybe leading to the you know, we always talk about the radicalization. This would lead to the radicalization of millions of new terrorists and cause the fall of a few moderate or friendly governments in the region. You know, maybe look at it this way. Rather than helping Israel, this could encourage Arabs to attack Israel in retaliation. An all-out war in the Persian Gulf would inevitably cause oil prices to spike. Using nuclear weapons in a first strike would alienate our last allies left in the West and certainly end any kind of arms talks anywhere else in the world. And along with the oil prices spiking, there's a very real possibility that the rest of the world might respond with economic boycotts to us, against us. But, you know, going back to talking about that analogy of him being the gambler, a gambler doesn't look at the downside. A gambler only looks at the possibility of winning. And I'm afraid in Bush's pitiful mind, attacking Iran might just be the blow that forces the Middle East to change its ways. You know, some sort of a humiliating blow against the Iranian government might cause the Iranian people to overthrow the government and maybe install a nice American-style democracy. A big macho display of American power might just convince others of the folly of fighting and lead them to find peaceful solutions to their problems in George Bush's world. It might turn out that the mullahs were the real source of all the world's terrorism, and getting rid of them will just simply turn off the spigot of the bad guys. And then seeing that through Georgie's eyes, with the terror ended and everybody in the Middle East making nice, prosperity will come to the regions, oil prices will go down for consumers, and business opportunities will open up to all of Bush's friends. And everybody will finally realize that George Bush was the only one with the strength and the foresight to do what needed to be done. And you can hear him saying it. You can hear him thinking it. You can see him thinking it. Then won't all those liberal peaceniks be sorry they were mean to him? And oh yeah, the Republicans will win in November and rule forever and ever. Amen. No, I think in his own mind, Bush has got plenty of reasons for betting the farm on another bigger war. He would want this war even if Republicans were in great shape for the election. I believe that. Maybe wagging the dogs is the least of our worries. I'd like to take a poll on that and find out how many people agree with me on that. I don't know how, I don't know what sense of immediacy there needs to be on this situation. It appears to me that they're trying to precipitate something. I believe this preemptive strike by Cy Hirsch may have caused them to have pause over this whole situation. Maybe they didn't think anybody was going to catch on for a while, and they could be well along in their plans and have them already, and now everybody's, they're under the microscope. Not only just to the people of the United States, but to the countries around the world, to our allies, to those maybe who have, who Bush would like to help us in any endeavor towards Iran. I don't think people are going to be lining up too quick to get in on that deal, do you? I mean, let's face it. This so-called war with Iraq, the military end of it that started out the first few days or week or however long it was to conquer their military and basically render them ineffective or non-existent. That was one thing. That was a weak, ill-equipped, ill-trained, very poor military. Iran's a whole different ballgame. Iran is not a country that's been left destitute by years of sanctions by the rest of the world. By no means are they a rich country, but they can fend for themselves. And anybody thinks, anybody that may think that we can walk into a country like Iran and they're just going to go, oh no, leave us alone, please, we give up. And that's not going to happen. All you got to do is take a look at that war between Iraq and Iran, all those years that it went on, and how many Iranians were killed. Oh, they'll fight for their country. They'll fight for their religion. They'll fight for their way of life. Their way of life is different than our way of life. We fight for our way of life. They'll fight for their way of life. I don't know. I don't know. I'm worried about it. And I don't want to be the purveyor of doom and gloom. But this is something serious that we all need to think about. If we're going to truly be good Americans, if we're going to love our country the way we should, if we're going to be patriotic toward the country, these are things that we need to consider. Should our government be doing this? I think not. And if you think not, we need to act. We need to let our voices be heard every single day. We've got to make the outcry so loud and long that they wouldn't dare do it. You might say they would do it anyway. No, not if our voices are loud enough. We must. We absolutely must. It's imperative that we make our voices known and let our government, the House, the Senate, the executive branch, let them know in no uncertain terms that we will not stand for this. I think average Joe American out here, everybody, reasonable people, Americans are reasonable people. And if you explain the truth to them and give them all the facts, been shown over and over and over again over the years that America will make the right decision when presented with all the facts. You can get polls to say whatever you want them to say. This is a soundbite world. Both political parties feed off of that. And in many instances, what the public doesn't know won't hurt them, according to the political parties. But when presented with the truth, and when given the opportunity to use the wisdom of the American people always do the right thing. Our government doesn't always do the right thing, but the American people always do the right thing. And the consensus of people in this country right now, let there be no question, the consensus of the people in this country believe that an invasion of Iran is insanity. Only those at the very far right side of the spectrum, and I mean the very right side, are those interested in imperialistic power. Those are the only people the only groups of people who thinks this is a good thing. Bush is standing now and saying before all of America, oh, no, we're not really, no, we're not, no, no. But remember, and I beg of you to remember, that before the Iraq War started, he told you the same thing then. Oh, no, just as a last resort. At last resort, war is a last resort. Do you remember him swearing that to the public? Do you remember him telling his Senate in the House, our only system of checks and balances in the country, convincing those people to vote for a war resolution that would give him the power to do what he wanted to do? But he swore to these people it would only be as a last resort. And as it turns out, as we found out now, last resort was a lie. It was the first resort. It always was. Long before 9/11, Mr. Bush had designs on invading Iraq. And so did the people who are his trusted confidants. Well, I don't know. We've talked a lot about this today. And I hope that if we've in some way spurred you on to talk to other people about it and convince other people that this is wrong for America, then that's a good thing. We'll talk some more about it tomorrow, most certainly. Somebody sent me an article. I know a lot of you know who Dana Rohrabacher is of Huntington Beach, California. He's a Republican congressman out there, and a little bit eccentric, I would say. And talking about the migrant problem, he suggested we don't need cheap migrant labor to keep our economy running. Let me quote him. We do not need more people from foreign countries coming in, taking the jobs of Americans, yeah. Said last week, Dana Rohrabacher, the immigrant-bashing Republican congressman, that we can do those jobs, even in the fields. The millions of young men and women who are, this is the interesting part of this, the millions of young men and women who are prisoners around our country can pick the fruits and vegetables. I say let the prisoners pick the fruits, said Dana Rohrabacher. I wonder, and I would love to ask him, when Rohrabacher said this, was he specifically thinking of Duke Cunningham, Jack Abramoff, and Tom DeLay and his staff and all the other Republicans who soon be joining them singing the blues on the chain gang? Are those the people Dana Rohrabacher was thinking ought to be picking the fruit and the vegetables? I wonder. Well, we've by no means exhausted this subject of Iran. And I know we'll be talking about it tomorrow and probably the day after that and the day after that. And regretfully, we may be talking about it for a long time. Regretfully, we may have to put a lot of pressure on these people. I'm prepared to do so. Are you? I thought so. If it's right, you're ready for it. Well, it's been an interesting day on the Guy James Show. I hope you've enjoyed our subject matter today. And I did want to mention that last song we played, I'm Tired of Hatred. That's the John Casper Band from his new CD, where We Are the Enemy. And a lot of good cuts on there. John Casper Band. You can Google that and find their website. Say, I do want to thank you so much for being with us today. I appreciate your listenership. I appreciate all the kind remarks. I even appreciate the ones that aren't so kind from our right-wing friends. But I'm glad you're along with us every day, and a lot of you are with us every single day, and I appreciate that so very much. And just want to let you know that. So do take care. We'll be back here tomorrow, 3 o'clock, or same time, I guess. I shouldn't be going into what time. Different times all over the country. Now I'm rambling. Hey, anyway, we've had a great time being here with you today. I look forward to tomorrow already, and I want you to always remember, you heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Good afternoon, and we'll see you again tomorrow.